Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio, and I'm your host. I just wanted to start off and wish everyone such a happy new year. 2015 is going to be an amazing and incredible year. I'm so excited to be here tonight and share so many questions from our listeners that I've been gathering through the last past months. Let's go to our first question. Dear Insight into Healing, my boyfriend's ex-wife keeps emailing and texting my boyfriend. And in some of those messages, there are some very inappropriate pictures. How do I handle this? Unfortunately, I do get this question a lot when people are married and when people are dating someone. What really brought to my attention was that, you know, are there children involved? I know it hasn't mentioned this in this question, but why are they emailing and texting so much? Is it on a daily basis? Is it a weekly basis? Is it a monthly basis? And if there are children, I think, number one, okay, there should be contact, but there's children involved and basic things, but I don't think this amount of emailing and texting is appropriate. And then when you say there are some very inappropriate pictures, that is what I really see a red flag. That is not acceptable behavior. That is not, you know, tolerable behavior. And number one, I would say, okay, check, you know, is there children involved? And what are these other emails and text messages, this back-and-forth communication? What are they about? How is your boyfriend handling this? Have you approached him to say, hey, what's going on with all these emails, with all these text messages? Is he able to address it? Sometimes I find when I do a lot of couples work in these type of situations, the man feels, okay, you know, just let it go away. She'll sooner or later stop the emails and the texting. They don't want to anger her or trigger anything, so they figure, you know, if I just ignore it, the person will stop corresponding with me. That isn't always the right answer. I think it should be addressed because especially you are, you know, your boyfriend is in a relationship with you and his ex-wife keeps contacting him. I think that is almost a red flag of saying, okay, what is going on? I'm not sure if she's actually given up on the relationship with your boyfriend. What does she still have some hope? And I think also talking to your boyfriend about why are you keeping the contact going? What is the contact about? Is he afraid or uncomfortable to confront her and say, hey, you know, I am in a relationship, if she doesn't know. I'm in a relationship. This isn't acceptable behavior. And that it's also sabotaging his relationship that he's currently in. I definitely can see where your concern is and how to handle this. It's a tough situation. So one, I would sit down with your boyfriend and have a conversation with him, if you haven't already, that you've noticed these emails and these text messages, and really just let him know that you feel very uncomfortable with this communication, with this correspondence. This is not something that you will tolerate, because I don't think it's anything anyone should tolerate. Yes, when there's kids involved, there is sometimes, you know, there has to be communication with the ex. When am I picking them up? What's going on with school? Are they sick? Yes, those are understandable. Those are reasonable. You do have to have contact with your significant other if you have children with them, you know, for the rest of your life because it's basically contact about the children. That I can understand. But I think a lot of times people get caught up and get comfortable and too familiar with their ex that they kind of go into back to old habits and let this type of, you know, relationship, this communication relationship linger on and go a little bit out of the bounds that it should be. I think there should be very strict boundaries. I also think if possible, if comfortable, not knowing how the ex-wife behavior is there a time where you and your boyfriend can send her an email? Can both of you sit down with her and say, what's going on? What is going on with these messages? They're inappropriate. They're not acceptable. Why do you think that these can keep ongoing on an ongoing basis, why are these continuing? And I think sometimes, you know, by asking her, by saying what's going on, really getting the full picture of what's going on in her mind. Because if you think if your boyfriend is still communicating with her on a daily basis and there isn't any children involved, why is he doing that? I'm not saying that he's having a relationship with her. I'm not saying that they're doing anything. But I think when there's an ex for a reason, and unless there's children involved and there's a reason why something like that, where you have to have communication, I really don't feel comfortable when the other person has moved on to another relationship that it's healthy to be in continuous communication with your ex, especially when it's upsetting your new partner, especially when there's inappropriate pictures. Now, when you say inappropriate pictures, are there pictures of people in positions that are, you know, expressing feelings? Is it, you know, innuendos? Is it risky? Is it, you know, what are these about? Is it flirting? Because I think that also can be cheating in some degree. Yes, there might not be any physical contact going on, but there can be emotional cheating, as we see so many times on social media, these Facebook relationships, different social media relationships, work relationships, where you build a bond with someone and you're speaking to them on a continuous basis. And I think what I always say to my clients, when you put yourself in a position where something like this can happen, not saying you can go in there with the best intentions, that this is not what you're looking for, this is not something you want to do, you love this, your spouse, you love your girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, you would not want to cheat on them. But don't put yourself in a position that can lead to something. Doesn't mean you're weak, doesn't mean that person doesn't love you, that they can be tempted, but why put yourself in that position? So I think, you know, definitely asking him, what is going on with that? Is he having issues breaking ties? Is he having issues, you know, putting a clear definition, a clear boundary that this relationship is over? What are the boundaries? What are the guidelines? You can only text or call me if you have children, if it's about the children, if it's only about the children, not about other things. Sometimes it's easier said than done, and it can lead into conversations. I'm not sure how long your boyfriend was married to his ex-wife, but, you know, in any relationship, they had a bond. So I think sometimes it's so easy to fall back into old behaviors, into old relationships, and keep that communication open and not feel that there's anything wrong with it. But as I always say, you have to close one door in order for another door to open. By keeping this other door open with your ex is dangerous. It's really, I would say, self-sabotaging. And it's causing a lot of pain, obviously, from this listener who's feeling really, I think, confused and concerned, and you have every right to feel concerned. But I also want to make sure, don't jump to conclusions that there has been any physical contact anymore between these two. I don't know if it's just flirting. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if she's initiating it or pursuing it. But either way, he needs to take a stand as your boyfriend. He needs to take a stand to her, set some boundaries, very clear boundaries, and say, this is my girlfriend. I am in a new relationship. This is not acceptable behavior. If he has children, this is when you can contact me. But other than that, we can't do this. And these inappropriate pictures have to stop. At no point is that acceptable, ever acceptable. When you're in another relationship, your ex should not be sending inappropriate pictures to you and should not be sending suggestive messages or suggestive pictures. I just feel that it's very dangerous. It's very tricky waters that should not be treaded on. And, you know, I think boundaries get a little blurry. Boundaries get a little unclear. And that's when mistakes happen. That's when people aren't thinking straight. You have to make sure, even if you have the best intentions, keep goals, keep boundaries. Don't allow yourself to be put into positions that can tempt you, that can put you in an area where you might make a bad decision. Doesn't mean that your boyfriend wants to cheat on you. Doesn't mean that your boyfriend still wants a relationship with his ex-wife. But I think you, as his girlfriend, it doesn't say how long you two have been dating, I think this is something that has to be discussed. This is something I don't think will go away. You know, maybe one day it will. She'll find a boyfriend. I don't know if she's remarried or has a boyfriend. But I think it definitely needs to be addressed, that this cannot happen anymore. If your boyfriend's willing to speak to her, I think, one, have him speak to her if you feel comfortable with that, and say, listen, I'm in a relationship. You know, you can't be sending me pictures anymore. You can't be doing this. It's wrong. This is the only time you can text me. And see, you know, give it a couple of weeks. See if any of the behavior has changed. If there's not an improvement and your boyfriend feels that he's done everything he possibly could, I would, you know, see if you and your boyfriend can, as a unified front, which I think the ex-wife needs to know, he is with in another relationship right now. You and him are a unified front. You are a couple. It's not that she can just communicate you and you communicate with him and you don't exist. You exist, and she needs to acknowledge it, even if she doesn't want to. And I know that's very hard, and I'm saying, you know, I know that there's a lot of ex-wives and ex-husbands saying that's really hard to do, and I totally understand that. But I think you need to respect the other person if they're in a relationship, just as you would want to be respected if you were in a relationship, if the tables were turned. So maybe it's a time for you and him to send an email together, or is it to the ex-wife, or is it a phone call to the ex-wife saying, you know, on conference call, this is what's going on. I'm not sure how she reacts to things, what type of person she is. And if that doesn't work, maybe meeting with her in person and saying, you know, this is what's going on. Hopefully that will be enough. But for some reason, if it continues, if it gets even, you know, becomes even worse, I think then it's really sitting down and talking to your boyfriend and saying, what's going on? This is pretty serious. And this isn't something you should be living with for the rest of your life. And this isn't something you should have to be dealing with on a daily basis. So I would definitely, number one, talk to your boyfriend, really get his point of view on it and see how he feels. If he doesn't feel like he wants to do anything about it and says, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, just let it be, then you really have to sit with yourself and say, is this a deal breaker for me? I think it might be a deal breaker for a lot of people. I can totally understand where you find it very disrespectful and kind of concerning. I would too. I feel like it's definitely a red flag. But I would really sit back and say, okay, what's going on? What are his motives? What have you invested in this relationship? And what has he invested in this relationship? And really take an inventory of where this relationship is going and what you want to deal with and what you don't. And thank you so much for sending that question in. Let's go to our second question. Dear Insight into Healing, my boyfriend's 10-year-old daughter can't stand me. She makes it almost impossible for me to be around them. Is this relationship doomed? No, this relationship is not doomed, but there's a lot of problems in it. There's a lot of trouble, and I totally understand where you're concerned and where you can feel, okay, is this relationship doomed? I think also, what is going on with the daughter, and how does your boyfriend react to the daughter's behavior? You said she can't stand you. She makes it almost impossible for you to be around them. What type of behaviors is she doing? Children can be children at times. I think sometimes when there's blended families, when there's a divorce and a new partner comes into the picture in the beginning, it's reasonable that the child will rebel a little bit, will might not accept it. You know, most children want mommy and daddy back together. I get that. But I think there has to be boundaries. Remember, these are children. You guys are the parents. You are the significant other. We cannot allow the child to act in such extremes, saying it's making it almost impossible for you to be around them. What is she doing? I mean, is she being emotionally abusive, verbally abusive? Is she throwing temper tantrums? And I think really exploring that and also looking at how long has this been going on? Is it something new? Is this a new relationship? Is this the first or second time you've met her? Or has this been going on for a year? Those are different stories. I think it takes time for children to sometimes acclimate themselves to a new partner, to their parents' new significant other. That's totally understandable, and it's work. I think nothing is like the Brady Bunch. I mean, maybe there's some families like that, but I don't think everybody gets along so well like that, especially in the beginning, so quickly. I think it takes time, it takes work, it takes patience, it takes understanding, and it takes an environment where there is an open communication, where people can express how they feel. The 10-year-old daughter, I can imagine she's feeling angry, she's feeling frightened, she's feeling like you're trying to replace her mother, she's feeling like you're stealing maybe her father from her. And those are all reasonable. I also work with young children. So I see that a lot when there's a divorce, when there's blended families. The children become very threatened. They feel like they're going to be abandoned, that they're going to be replaced. I'm not sure if you have children yourself, but sometimes that's a lot for a child to feel, okay, now this now I have to share my dad's love with another child. And I think it's so hard for adults to deal with divorce, to deal with, you know, their ex-spouses dating again with blended families. It's hard for them to comprehend and grasp it. We can only imagine what it's like for children. And I think that's what adults really need to understand. You are the adults. Children have hard times, as adults do, but even more to comprehend this. Remember, their developmental skills, their social skills, their communication skills, the way they reason things have not really completely developed. And a lot of times, children will blame themselves. Children take things personally. So we really want to make sure we're paying attention to this child. And I know it must be pretty hard if this child is obviously making you miserable and, you know, can't stand you and is verbalizing how she feels about you. But I think you, as the adults, to maybe approach the young daughter and say, okay, what's going on? I can understand you're feeling upset. I can understand you're angry. Is there anything I can do? And I know sometimes at first you might hear some pretty horrible comments back, like, I want you to leave. I want my mother back. You're not my mother. That's reasonable. But I think you as the adult try, and I know it's hard, to have the self-control of not reacting to this young child. No matter how horrible she gets, try not to get down on her level to defend yourself, to fight back with her. That's not saying you have to put up with her disrespecting you and getting out of control. Those are two different things. If she's disrespectful and she's getting out of control, you have every right to say, I will not be spoken to like that, and leave, or speak to your boyfriend and say, listen, you need to speak to your daughter. These are not acceptable terms. But we want to make sure, because sometimes it's so hard, especially when there's a 10-year-old, especially when the other child is screaming at you and calling you names, to kind of stoop down to their level. We want to make sure you go in there with a mindset. It's like work. It's making a conscious decision that this, you're not going to let this little girl trigger you, no matter what she says, no matter what she does. You are the adult. And I think really, you know, speaking to her, first speaking to your boyfriend, if you haven't already, and addressing this, because this must be very upsetting for him too, and I can only imagine that he sees this. I've actually worked with a couple of groups and couples where the child only does it behind their parents' back, so the other parent doesn't realize that the child is being so horrible to the new girlfriend, the new boyfriend, and almost their parent thinks, you know, are you making this up? My child is always, you know, doesn't act like this. You know, are you sure this is not just you? So I think making sure that, you know, what is your relationship like with your boyfriend? Do you have open communication? You know, this is a tough subject. This is his daughter. And I think never at any point do you ever ask him to choose between you and his daughter. That is not acceptable. And I sometimes get into these sessions with some clients where they want to know, you know, I want to know that, you know, you'll always choose me and that you love me. It's a different love that a parent has for their child than a man and a woman share. There are two different types of relationships. There are two different types of love. Children can get jealous. Children cannot sometimes understand, obviously, the difference. They feel threatened. The other person's, they're going to take their parents' love. But as adults, we need to really check ourselves, take a self inventory and say, okay, this is not about me. This is about this child. This is about a relationship. And I know it's hard work. Maybe, you know, sometimes I would just say, get to see your own therapist to speak about this. You know, make sure it's not triggering anything from your childhood. But I think it's really, you know, building strong coping skills, strong communication skills, being able to really emotionally process what's going on. Because I can imagine how hard it must be to have a relationship with your boyfriend when his daughter is making it so difficult and almost kind of putting that wedge between you. But I think this can also be a way to strengthen your relationship with your boyfriend at some point. I know right now that doesn't seem like that's possible and it seems so overwhelming, but it's going to take work. Like any relationship, it takes time to build that foundation, to work together. And I think being able to overcome this, explore this, and address this with your boyfriend will really help you kind of utilize the skills and the strength and bond in your relationship that you can actually role model for his daughter what a healthy relationship is. Because sometimes children see black and white. Sometimes children see all good and all bad. So by being able to show this little girl, this 10-year-old daughter, that it's okay she feels so strongly against you and has mistreated you, that you can still love her and that you'll still treat her with respect and that you wouldn't abandon her, maybe that will kind of start tearing down that wall of anger, of resentment, of jealousy, and open up her heart a little bit to say, you know, this woman is really showing that she cares about me. And, you know, I can see why my dad would want to be with her. I could see what's going on. And I know it takes time, and this is all in a perfect world that people cannot can control their emotions like this. But I think it's important. If this is a man you see yourself with long term, if you see yourself marrying him, if you really see a future with him, this has to be addressed with the daughter. Even if he just gets his daughter every other weekend or, you know, once a month, or every weekend or during the week, this is something that won't go away. So many times people say, you know what, I'll just ignore the child. It will not go away. I think the resentment builds, it lingers as the child gets older. I think this needs to be addressed. And I think also, what about the mother of the 10-year-old, his ex? How is she handling this? Is she collaborating with the child? Is she egging on the child? Or is she supportive of you? Is she supportive of your boyfriend, her ex-husband? Because I think that's very important, too, to bring her in and say, listen, you know, I know you're upset. This woman is not taking mommy away. This woman is not taking daddy away. But this is what's going on. And, you know, no matter what, you can't be disrespectful to her. You can't, you know, make things miserable. You can't throw temper tantrums. There has to be some self-control. And I think also seeing maybe if you and your boyfriend, if it's, because I'm not sure if it's caused any problems in your relationship with him, maybe going into therapy and exploring this issue, maybe him and his daughter going into some family therapy with the ex-wife and really addressing this. Because I think that's so important sometimes to see if you can get the ex on board. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But I would see, you know, you didn't say yet how your relationship is with her, the daughter's mother, but I think she could be a great asset and a great support system, something to utilize. So I would talk to your boyfriend about this. I would talk to the 10-year-old calmly. And I think, remember, don't ever try to speak to someone in the middle of a temper tantrum, in the middle of a meltdown. That's either you or the daughter or at the both times or your boyfriend. You want to address her when she's calmed down already, maybe a day before, a day after the argument, a couple of days. Don't ever do it when emotions are high, because I think sometimes people say things they don't mean. People can't think clearly. People are kind of in the fits of everything going on, especially a 10-year-old girl. So you want to, you know, address her when she's calm, when she's happy, when she's feeling safe. And you don't have to come right out and jump to the point, but I think slowly start trying to build a relationship with her and start saying, you know, acknowledging, okay, what's going on? Is there anything I can do? Is there anything we can do to improve this relationship? Just saying, you know, I really love your father, and I really want to be a part of this family, and I really want to be with you, and what can we do? Involve her in this so she doesn't feel, because sometimes I think children feel like they're forced that they have to accept this new spouse, this new girlfriend or boyfriend, and that's tough. I mean, even for adults, that's tough when we're forced to accept something. So I think, you know, find out where she's coming from. Then maybe the third step would be talking to your boyfriend and the daughter at the same time. If it still is not getting any better, I would speak to the mother, the ex-wife, and saying maybe she can get involved, if she can speak to her daughter, see what's going on. And then if not, I think going into family therapy and really seeing, you know, what can be done. So, no, this relationship is not doomed. Let's go to our third question. Dear Insight into Healing, my ex-wife has started dating again. We have been divorced for 2 years now. I've noticed I've been feeling jealous and angry a lot. Does this mean I still love her? Interesting question. Does this mean I still love her? You know, it depends. It doesn't mean love her and maybe the extent of when you first met her or when you were married to her, that passionate love, that falling in love love. This is actually your ex-wife. You've been divorced for 2 years. Obviously, you married her for a reason. And I think sometimes people get confused. feelings don't go away. Doesn't mean you're still in love with her and you want to be in a marriage with her. But I think you loved that person as a person at one point in your life. You were in a very important relationship. You two went through a lot. You got married in front of the eyes of God. You made a promise to each other. So I think that is important that you still have feelings with her. And I think it doesn't mean, I don't know if you're in another relationship now or what's going on, but I think it's something to explore. Also, is there a chance that you could still want a relationship with her? You've been divorced for 2 years now, and she has started dating again. What is your dating life? Have you started dating again? I think really being honest with yourself. Have you moved on? And I think sitting with it, and I think sometimes we can get confused, and I sometimes have, you know, people that get, you know, that after a divorce, after a breakup, they only remember the good. And that happens. And they can only remember all the good times. They can't remember the bad times. And you almost sometimes idealize that person. And that happens within, you know, I think the first 6 months after a relationship ends, after a marriage ends. And as I said before, a divorce is a grieving process. You are grieving a death of a relationship. You're dealing the death of a dream, a death of an ideal. So I think, yes, there is going to be sadness. There's going to be anger. There's going to be bargaining. There's going to be all different types of stages that you're going through. And it has been 2 years. So I think when you said she started dating again, how is that for you? When you say anger and feeling like you're jealous, is it because it's hard for you to see her with someone else? Or is it hard for you to know that she moved on? Do you feel like you haven't moved on? I mean, have you been dating other people? Or are these just irrational feelings? You know, we're all humans. Yes, sometimes it is hard, no matter how long you've broken up with someone. Even if you wanted the end of the marriage, the end of the relationship, it's a hard pill to swallow to see your ex with somebody else. I think after many years, it's okay. But I think we're all humans. Sometimes it kind of just, pokes you there in the heart a little bit. And that's normal. That happens. But how are you dealing with that? Is that becoming consuming? Are your thoughts consumed by this? Are your actions consumed by this? Are your feelings consumed by this? And I think that's really the most important thing. What are you doing with your anger and your jealousy? How are you processing it, if at all? And I think that's what's really important. And that's where you really, the answer lies. I can't tell you, are you still in love with her? I can't give you a definite yes or no answer. And I think that's really frustrating for some people because they want to know, is this what I should be doing? Do I love her? Do I not love her? Should I pursue this? And I think sometimes it comes even more apparent to that when the other person starts dating. It becomes more like, okay, I need to make a decision. What's going on? So I think it's really being, how have you been processing the divorce? How have you been processing the end and grieving this marriage? Have you done it? And being honest with yourself, do you still have those strong feelings? And I think giving yourself time and really being able to sit with the anger, to sit with the jealousy, is it just basic anger and jealousy? Or do you feel like you're really consumed by it? Is it really, you know, you can't sleep, you can't eat? Are you feeling really anxious? Are you acting out behaviors? Are you taking it out on other people? That when that starts happening, I think that really starts becoming a red flag. That is when I think you need to see a therapist, or I think even right now might be something you want to do to explore these feelings. And it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong. It doesn't mean that you can't handle this on your own. But I think it's important to sometimes go in and see an objective person and explore the relationship, the end of the relationship. Sometimes just talking about it answers your questions, brings you closure. Have you had closure? It doesn't sound like on the end of the marriage. And I think being able to really sit with that and really explore it, and I know it's not going to be comfortable the first couple of times, the first couple of sessions, maybe even the first couple of months. It's going to be heart-wrenching. It could be kind of rehashing things. But I think it's important to go there, to really look at, is this someone I'm still in love with? Is this someone I want to pursue, go back and pursue a relationship? Or is this my pride? Has my ego been hurt? Because we want to make sure we're not acting out just because our pride and our ego are hurt, and being able to know the difference, because sometimes we'll act that out, sabotage the other person's relationship. Then we get that person back and say, you know, I don't think I ever wanted that person. I think I just didn't want them to be with anybody else. So we want to be sure. I mean, is it a selfish act? And that happens. I mean, everyone feels that way sometimes. We can be selfish. That's okay, too. But I think it's really saying, is this, you know, how do you feel about this? I mean, is this something long-term? Have you really been thinking about you want to, you know, resurrect your marriage? You really want to work on things with her? And I think, I don't know what type of relationship you have with her now. If you speak to your ex-wife on a daily basis, I know you know she started dating again. I'm not sure if you've seen her or friends have told you. But, I mean, maybe exploring that with her, if that's possible. And just saying, you know, I'm kind of confused. I'm kind of having mixed feelings. And that's normal. And I think really being honest with yourself and being able to address it, and I know it's easier said than done, but I think you will start finding closure and you'll start, you know, uncovering feelings, thoughts that might give you a better indicator of what you really want and what you're really looking at. Because sometimes when we're very angry, when we're jealous, when we're feeling hurt, when our ego's hurt, we can't think too clearly. So we want to make sure we can really address this in a clear, safe environment and be open enough and vulnerable, which can be hard, to really explore, you know, what does this mean? What is going on? Let's go on to our fourth question. Dear Insight into Healing, I have not been happy at my job for many years now, but I'm afraid I am not good at anything else. What should I do? Very interesting. Another very interesting question, which I get a lot. I think number one, let's first explore, address, I have not been happy at my job for many years now. Was there a time you were ever happy at your job? That I think is important. Let's explore that. If there is a time you were happy at your job, why? What made you happy? How long were you happy? When you interviewed for this job, was this something you wanted to do? Was this your passion? Or did you just take this job out of, you know, you needed a job for financial reasons, for emergency reasons? I think looking at both is very, very important. Is it something your parents, you know, encouraged you to do? Is it something that your spouse or your family and friends pressured you? Or is this something you really wanted to do? And then for how many years? What makes you not happy at your job? Are you not feeling challenged? Are you feeling bored? Do you not like the actual work itself? Is it the people you work with? Is it the relationships at work? I think really exploring the different degrees and identifying what doesn't make me happy. And once you get to that point where you can start really clearly putting aside what doesn't make you happy, and this might take a couple of months just exploring that. We don't want to ever force it or push it to find an answer because that never happens. I think by sitting with it, as I always say, and just letting it kind of develop, letting it unfold, is really important. And when you find out what you're not happy with at your job, is there anything in your control you can do about it? If there is, what can you do? And I think addressing that, what in your power that's feasible could you do to make this a better work environment, to make yourself feel better about this? Is there anyone you can speak to at work? Do you have a supervisor? Do you have a colleague you really trust? And to really address it with him. And I think, to be honest, we love what we do. There's people, I mean, I love what I do. There's a lot of people who love and that's their passion and they do. But what's human and what's realistic is we can't be happy every single day. And I think people get stuck in that, oh, it's supposed to look this way, it's supposed to look that way. That we get caught up in the ideal and not the reality. So I think really looking at that, you know, what is the reality and what is your ideal about what you think your job, your employment, what your life should look like? And also, are you happy with where you are in life other than in your employment, in financial area? How about emotionally? Are you happy where you are? Mentally, are you happy where you are? Relationship-wise, are you happy where you are in life? What about your friend relationships, peer relationships? What about relationships with family members? What, other than work, what defines you? Because sometimes we allow our job to define us, and then if we're not happy with it or we get discouraged, that can hit every area of our life and impact us and almost kind of cause self-doubt, depression, sadness, questioning, resentment. So how would you say the other parts of your life are? I mean, what are your other social activities? What are your hobbies? What else do you enjoy doing? And are you really utilizing them? Is it going to the gym? Is it going bike riding? Is it going movies? I mean, are you just making your job your entire life? And I think that's what's really important, too, that we make sure we don't define ourselves by one thing. We wanted to define ourselves by everything that we do. Who are you as a person? And really being able to address that. And then if you really go through all of that and realize, you know, it's really the job. This is not what I'm happy. The job, no matter what I can do, or what I can add, what I can enhance, who I speak to, I'm not going to find happiness here. It's a dead end. Then what else do you like to do? I know you said, you know, you don't. The only reason why you're not leaving is because you're afraid you're not good at anything else. That I'm always saying, where did that thought come from? Is that a negative monologue you've had since childhood? Is that something a teacher maybe implanted in your head when you were in school? Is that from a past job? Is that a supervisor? Did someone plant that seed in your head, or did that come from you? Because sometimes we can subconsciously, consciously incorporate negative monologues from our family members, from ourselves, from peers, from past employment, for our supervisors, and we allow that to kind of keep running in our head, and we start believing that. So we really want to make sure, too, what do you mean you're not good at anything else? What is the reality of that, and where did that come from? You know, I believe everybody's good at a lot of things, and I think it's really finding out what do you really enjoy doing? Do you do things that motivate you? Do you do things that inspire you? Do you feel challenged in your life, or do you feel stuck? And I think at what point, where are you in your life now? How would you rate your life? You know, what also, I think you did not say how old you were, but I think it also depends on what stage of your life you are in. What are things going on? And also if there's been any other big events in your life. Has there been a move? Has there been, you know, sometimes when there's a divorce or there's a marriage or there's a death in the family or there's an illness, it can put all these different things in perspective and make things more apparent or more feel like, okay, I'm not happy, what's going on, I need to make a change. So we really want to sit with it. It sounds like you said many years now you haven't been happy. How have you been dealing with it, I think, for these last couple of years, these last couple of months? And I think also really truly looking at it, how is your quality of life? If you find that you're going to work every day and in the morning before you go to work, you're throwing up, you're crying, you're sick to your stomach, you're nervous, and you really can't function, that's something to really look at. I mean, I really don't think anyone should stay at a job that makes them that sick. If your quality of life is really being impacted by your job and your daily functioning is really low and not good because of your employment, then, you know, you have to put you first. You have to take care of yourself. And I think so many times due to financial restraints, family restraints, that, you know, you can't afford to not work. You need this money. You need the health insurance. So I think it's also maybe finding a job coach to explore different options. Doesn't mean you have to quit this job right away, but I think it also doesn't mean you can't start exploring other areas of interest. Is it going to HR? Is it talking to friends or colleagues or people that are in different areas, speaking to them in different area fields, saying, hey, what do you enjoy about this? You know, what is this? And also finding out, if you did change jobs, what would you need? Would you need to go back to school? Would you need to take a training? Would you need to take a pay cut? I think really taking a real, you know, check and really saying, okay, what is the reality of this? What can I do? And I know it can sound very, very overwhelming and you can feel, you know, this is too much. I'd just rather stay here. And that happens. People think, you know what, it's easier just to stay here and kind of give up than go out there on the unknown, than to make that change. And I understand that. But staying somewhere where you're this miserable, where you're so upset, if this is how you really feel, is not healthy. It's not one day just going to get better. I think you need to make a conscious effort saying, okay, I want to work on this. I want to have a better life. I think, you know, talking to a job coach, seeing a therapist, maybe going to a life coach, talking to your primary care doctor, a good friend that you trust, a family member, and asking them, what do you see me doing? What do you think my strengths are? And these are people you trust. You don't want to go to someone you don't really trust or someone that, you know, you can't think objectively and really work with you. And so, you know, what are my strengths? What are my barriers? What are things I need to work with? And then also going to, you know, sitting with yourself. I say a lot of journaling exercises that I do, and I will be doing one at the end of the show tonight. But really addressing that. Sit down with a journal, a piece of paper, and it doesn't have to be long paragraphs, but write down your strengths. Write down your weaknesses. Write down your goals. Write down where you see yourself in 3 months, where you see yourself in 6 months, where you see yourself in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And we want to make sure you're doing this without judgment. We don't want you to sit there and really judge yourself and feel, oh, that's not going to work. This is a place when you're journaling, you're not questioning yourself. You're not doubting yourself. You are writing what comes to mind and putting it on a piece of paper. It's very powerful to have that on a piece of paper. And right when you're doing it, you might not have any answers. You might not think, oh, wow, this is it, and have that aha moment. That's okay. We're not looking for that. If it happens, great. But if it doesn't, don't be discouraged. We want you to be able to kind of keep looking back over that. Because I find we'll write something one day, and either a day, a week, a month, 6 months later, we'll go back and look at that with a new set of eyes. And I think that's what's really important. You might take something from what you wrote in that journaling exercise a different way than you would have 3 months ago. And I think you learn more about yourself. You're able to sit back and read it and say, wow, I must have really felt like this, or wow, this is really challenging, or, you know, I'd really like to do this, and allow it to happen. Allow yourself to be open to change and to hearing yourself, your feelings, your thoughts, and also thoughts and feelings of other people that you trust and respect. And I think really sitting with that, and then you'll start to find some answers. And then what should you do? Explore that and then really address, okay, what makes me happy? What's in my power to change, to work on, and what can I do? Great, let's go on to our last question. Dear Insight into Healing, how does a person deal with being in the entertainment industry? I know it can be very competitive and ruthless at times. What do you recommend for building a strong sense of self? Amazing question. I love it. And I think you answered one of your questions right there. What do you recommend for building a strong sense of self? That is very important. If you want to be in any industry, I think especially the entertainment industry, you need to know who you are. And it does not happen overnight. It takes time. I'm still figuring out who I am. I have a pretty good sense of who I am and what I want. But I think it's an open learning process. It's something you learn day by day. But you need to have the confidence and love who you are. Love who you've become. Love your good attributes. Love your quirks. Love stuff that you need to work on. And being accepting of yourself. When you are accepting of yourself, others feel that. Others see that. Doesn't mean there's not going to be people judging and treat you unfairly out there. Unfortunately, they're all out there. And in the entertainment industry, it's a little bit harsher. The competition is tough, but do not be discouraged. I think, and setting clear boundaries. Do not let people treat you any other way than with utmost respect and dignity. No matter if you're just starting out, if you're new, or if you've been in the industry for a long time. That is one of also my goals for this radio show. I want to make sure young girls, young boys, people who are starting out in the industry, who sometimes, you know, we get so eager and so anxious for approval or for people to, you know, to meet these big people, we get all like kind of starstruck or in awe or intimidated. Don't compromise who you are for any audition, for any job, for any, you know, someone gives you a networking idea or to a networking event. Stay strong in who you are and what you are and what you bring to the table. Remember, we all started out with no experience, even the people at the top. Everybody questions themselves sometimes. Everybody is insecure. When I still go on stage, I get nervous. Right before I do my radio show, I get butterflies in my stomach and get all nervous. That is normal. That's what makes you good. That's what keeps you alive. That's what gives you that passion. but make sure you really get to know who you are. And it's not going to be white or black, it's total answer, this is what it is. It's accepting it and being able to keep yourself open emotionally, mentally, in your mind of who you are, and listen to it. And if something doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. Don't do anything against your judgment. If your core and your gut tell you don't do it, don't do it. No matter what other people tell you, everybody else does it, this is the only way you're going to make it, don't believe them. Stay true to yourself. You're the one who has to look at yourself in the mirror every day. Do what you feel comfortable, that you can respect yourself, that your family would feel proud of you, that you would feel proud of yourself, that God would feel proud of yourself, proud of you. We want to make sure we always stay on that path. Do not compromise, because I find sometimes when I've worked with people who have compromised, then that opens the door, well, I guess I did this, and then it kind of brings down your self-esteem and your self-worth, and that's only in your eyes. Doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. And then you start allowing people to treat you different ways or take roles or take jobs that are demeaning to you because you feel like, well, I've done this, I can probably do this. No, it's never too late to take a stand and say, you know what, I don't feel comfortable with it, and that's it. You don't have to explain. You do not have to defend yourself. If you don't want to do something, you don't want to do something. And yes, the industry can be very competitive. But I think it's, you know, when you go in for an audition or if you're a musician, I'm not sure what part of the entertainment industry you want to be a part of. But to know, you know what, as my mom always tells me and always has told me since I was young, sometimes not everybody's going to like you. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. Sometimes people just don't like you. I don't know, maybe you look like their ex-girlfriend, their ex-boyfriend, or you remind them of a horrible teacher they had in school. You don't have to somehow convince them that they should like you, that you're good enough. It is what it is. Some people will never like you, and it has nothing to do with you. And I think people really, you really need to get that in your mind. And it's taken me a long time, believe me. It has nothing to do with you most of the time when people don't like you. And you don't have to waste your time trying to convince them to like you and defending you and trying to sell yourself. It's their loss. Keep doing what you're doing. Surround yourself with positive people. Surround yourself with healthy people, inspirational people. Since I've been doing my radio show, the people I've met on my radio show, the network, my mentors, a lot of my guests who have, I can call my friends, my mentors, have taught me so much and have encouraged me so much that it's priceless what I've learned from them. And I think that's another thing. Learn from others in the industry. It's amazing to hear what they have to say, what they've gone through. What is their advice? How would they say to deal with this? And I think always build on your craft. Is it taking classes? Is it taking workshops? Is it practicing monologues? Is it learning new songs, taking voice lessons? And if you don't have the money to do it on your own. You know, take things off the internet. Everything now is on YouTube. Learn how to do certain things and practice, practice, practice. I think that's what's really important about knowing your craft, knowing your strengths, and finding your niche. What is good? What kind of stands out? What about it? What's going on? And I think really finding that. So many, you know, through the years of everything that's been going on with all my different careers, everyone has always told me, you have to choose. Either you have to be a social worker, either you have to be an actress, either you have to be a commercial print model, or you have to only be a certified personal trainer, aerobics instructor. And I said, no, I want to do all of them. And I've been told for many years, not by my parents, thank God they were always supportive of me, but no, you have to choose. It's not normal that people have all these different jobs. And I know it can be overwhelming. But if it's overwhelming for other people, what does that impact me? I enjoy it. I love it. And I think that's what it is, finding your niche and don't allow others to talk you out of it. If you feel comfortable, if this is what you want to do, do it and work on it. So practice, learn from your mentors, seek out networks, seek out education, learn from others, watch videos. Always, always, always educate yourself and surround yourself with a positive, healthy, inspiring, motivating support system. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. I want to go on to our journaling exercise. What is your short-term goal for 2015? And what is your long-term goal for 2015? Why I chose this is I find so many times I've been watching on the news and looking at everything that people have these New Year's resolutions, and then after a month or two, they're back to old behaviors or they didn't accomplish it, and they give up. And that happens. But I think by doing a short-term goal, try not to set yourself up with something that you know that is impossible. And it's not just because you can't do it or there's something wrong with you. Sometimes it's impossible. If you're going to lose 25 pounds in 6 months, that's a lot of work. How about saying, you know what, I want to make sure I get to the gym at least twice in the next week. Start with that. Once you accomplish that, check that off. The next goal, I want to cut out, I don't know, pizza from my diet. Once you do that, check. The next goal, I want to start adding more cardio to my workout. Check, do that. Or if it's something in work-wise or relationship, I want to learn to be able to be more, let's say your long-term goal is to be more assertive. Short-term goal, I want to be able to go to work and maybe speak up a little bit more. Doesn't mean you have to tell them you want a raise, even though that's what you want. If that's too much, that might be too, you know, sabotaging yourself because that might be too much right away. Maybe saying, I'm going to go in, I'm going to ask, you know, say hi to my supervisor and say, hey, I'd like to meet for supervision maybe on a once-a-month basis. Meet them for supervision. Once you do that, check. Maybe talk about next time. I'm going to speak to my supervisor about what's my job description? What is my expectation? What is this? Check that off. And then maybe saying, you know, presenting a case. Hey, I've been doing this. I've been coming in for supervision. I've been working on this. I've taken these classes, you know, and I feel that I need a raise. Boom. And I think it's by setting yourself up. We just want to go from 1 to 90 in one shot. It can be done. Believe me, it can be done. But in order, sometimes they make sure you get more success and more enjoyment so you can actually kind of enjoy what you're doing and be present with what you're doing while working on their goals. It's good to take these little steps and these little kind of different goals, working towards the long-term goal. So I would definitely find your short-term goal for 2015 and then your long-term goal. Put it down in the journal, write it down, and also find little steps along the way. Is it, you know, going to the gym a little bit more? Is it speaking up for yourself? Is it maybe attending that community board meeting in your co-op? Is it, you know, taking your dog for longer walks? Is it maybe telling that friend who, you know, always cancels at the last minute, hey, I'm not happy with that? I think doing those little steps, building up your self-confidence and building up your encouragement. Encourage yourself. We always want to be good to ourselves. And we want to make sure we're not in judgment because, you know, and unfortunately, there's tons of people out there who can judge us, who can tell us what's wrong with us. But we need to be our own best warrior. We need to stick up for ourselves. We need to say, you know what, this is who I am, and to really believe in yourself. And I know it's easier said than done, but it's an ongoing process. It's a learning process, but it's also very empowering. So if anyone has any more questions, please send it to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Insight Into Healing, and give us a like, and also you can send me a private message. Again, all names are confidential. I will never discuss any names, and I usually change some of the identifying information around so the people who send in the questions cannot be identified. So the song that led us in the beginning was Every Good Thing by the Afters, and it will lead us out. Every good thing. Everyone, good night, and God bless.